Welcome back to Whose Crime Is It Anyway? This is Lisa here, and if you haven't heard from our socials, we're doing something a little different this week. We met with our friends Courtney and Stephanie from their Terrified and Tipsy podcast, and we discussed the Zodiac movie from 2007. We love us some Mark Ruffalo, RDJ, and Jake Gyllenhaal. And this movie was long, so you get a full 90 minutes with us today. You can also get to see us in action for the first time ever. If you want to see the uncut video version of this episode, which is about 20 minutes longer, you can find it on the Tipsy Pod Patreon page on the OMG BFF tier. Their Patreon link can be found at www.patreon.com/tipsypod. We hope you enjoy this episode and stick around until the end for a fun game of Would You Rather. Toodles!
They're Terrified and Tipsy is brought to you by Slash and Cast.
Doing okay.
We have a special episode today.
Yeah, we do.
We have a bonus episode today with some friends.
And who might we have with us?
Well, we have Lisa and Shell from Whose Crime Is It Anyway? Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for having us here. This is so great.
It's exciting.
Yes, we got past our technical difficulties, which was on our part.
Yeah, when we were trying to say that it was, ours is fine.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we've done Zencaster plenty of times. Yeah. We're not the ones at fault.
No, we're the issue.
Yeah.
Usually we are the issue anyway, so.
Yep. We've all had issues, trust me. It happens. It happens to the best of us.
Do you guys want to tell our friends a little bit about your show?
Yeah. Yes. Beast, you want to take it away?
All right. So we cover true crime cases from Canada. So it's all Canadian cases. And Shell and I have just been buddies for a really long time. And we were so obsessed with true crime. And we're like, why don't we just do our own? And we've been doing it for, a couple of years now.
2 years, I think. Yeah. Yeah. We started pre-pandemic.
And we've
kind
adapted.
Taken some breaks.
Yes. But we're still going, and we're super excited to get back into things and, share
absolutely.
More true crime.
Yeah. And the podcast is called Whose Crime Is It Anyway, which is a play on the Whose Line Is It Anyway with, two great Canadians are in that. So our little pun that we have.
Yeah.
I love it.
Where can they find you?
We're everywhere.
Yep.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, pretty much every platform that you can get a podcast on. We're there.
Are you on all the social medias?
Everything except for TikTok, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
We're kind of into TikTok.
Yeah. We struggle a little with TikTok, but we try.
I feel like TikTok is now huge for true crime. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, true crime is everywhere. Like, literally, you can find true crime everywhere, which is fantastic.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's into it. And there's so many cases, like, we're going to talk about one today, but there's so many cases that everybody knows about anyway. So it's a really good niche to be in.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But you guys, you cover the Canadian true crime. Yeah. So this is going to be fun for you guys as well.
It's
a big one.
Yes, this is a big one. And we don't get to cover like the big U.S. cases. So, but we still obviously consume all that content and theorize. Sure. So this will be great.
Well, it's good too for us too, because we just cover like horror stories. And I mean, these true crime moments are horror stories, like real life horror stories.
Yeah.
So, but we don't actually cover anything true crime related. So this will be fun for both of us too, because we're doing something true crime related and you guys are doing U.S. true crime. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Look at us branching out.
Okay, so we watched Zodiac from 2007.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a little IMDb synopsis for it, and then Courtney will kick us off. Yeah.
I think so. Sweet. Cool. Let's do it.
Okay, between 1968 and 1983, a San Francisco cartoonist becomes an amateur detective obsessed with tracking down the Zodiac Killer, an unidentified individual who terrorizes Northern California with a killing spree.
He does.
But they make it seem like one killing spree. It happens over like decades.
It does.
It's over a big span of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being a killer and doing it for that long?
Or living in Northern California during this time?
No. Oh, God.
I'd move. I would literally move.
That's the thought I had so much watching this movie was like, how are any of these people like out and about feeling comfortable anywhere where they live? And it's just like, oh, he kills, disappears, and then we're just supposed to just go on with our lives? No, how?
Yeah. It's not a thing.
And it's crazy to think how many serial killers there were in that era. And people were just not locking their doors.
No.
And they weren't like learning from all these other killers. Like, okay, like maybe we should start locking our doors.
Should we stop trusting people so easily?
Well, I think it was easier back then because there wasn't like, obviously there wasn't DNA.
Like something like this would never get away with today.
Well, and also, it
would
like, last decades. No cell phones.
No cell phones.
Like GPS tracking.
Exactly.
Well, because even like instances where some of these people were, like couples were in their cars, it's like you see a sketchy car, your phone is out immediately. Like you're ready to call someone or do something. So it would never.
Yeah. I think we all have a level of paranoia at some level.
100%. Oh, yeah. I feel doing the podcast has made me slightly more, I don't want to say paranoid, but like kind of.
But kind of.
Like cautious. Someone knocks on my door.
There we go.
Yeah. But like I like don't trust anything. Like if someone knocks on the door and I'm not expecting someone, I'm like, I'm flying out of my seat.
Absolutely.
It's like, calm down. Like, I just totally jump to conclusions with everything. But
like, it's just the Amazon
to save your life.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I can get kind of paranoid anyway, but especially after anytime we watch like a scary movie or anything relatable or that could happen, I'm like, my head is on a swivel and I'm like, what was that sound? Is someone in my attic? Like, I don't know where it comes from, but I'm just immediately uncomfortable.
Of course. Everything is haunted.
Absolutely. There's a presence in my house I didn't know was there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm
not for Courtney, though.
Not for me. I mean, I probably should be a little bit more paranoid or afraid.
Or cautious. Michelle's cautious.
Yeah. Cautious. Uh-huh. Excuse me. But yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I lock my doors. Believe me. I do lock my doors.
Yeah, so don't even try it. They're locked.
Yeah. I don't know. So anyways. Okay.
You want to start us off?
I mean, sure. I mean, we start on July 4th, 1969 in Vallejo, California. Mm-hmm. Is it like two teenagers in a car?
I thought they were like in their 20s, maybe.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But why would you go to the parking spot? Like what do they call it?
It was like Lover's Lane.
Yeah. Lover's Lane. Yeah.
Well, because we find out that like, doesn't she have a boyfriend or a husband or something? And they were sneaking around.
Yeah.
It kind of seems that way. Or like maybe she had left him and he's like kind of harassing her a little bit.
Something.
So she's kind of like paranoid about that.
Because they were going to go to like a diner, but then she said it was too crowded. So that's when they ended up at that like Lover's Lane overlook kind of area.
And there was nobody else there though. I mean, I think they were there and then they left. But I'm like, okay. I just feel like there should be a lot more. Or maybe I've watched too many movies where
everybody's hooking up just cars.
Yeah. They're like having like one big orgy basically all in different cars.
So weird. The lineup of cars. That is so weird. Yeah.
I know. Why would you want to have sex with somebody in a car, in your car?
Immediately next to somebody else.
Literally. In a car. Less than a car space away.
It's like very Roman.
Yeah. Some people may be into it. I don't know.
I mean, I guess. Whatever. Well, like there was a car that pulled up being sketchy, pulled away, and then he ends up coming back, and the kids end up dying. I know this was kind of like quickly done, but. Mm-hmm.
But he kind of has this flashlight, I guess, so they can't see who it is, and he just shoots them. Just completely.
Doesn't say a word, walks right out and just like starts shooting.
I think, too, the couple thought that it was the police coming up.
Yeah.
Because the flashlight in the face, and then, you know, you kind of like, oh,
get your wallet out.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Because he made it, the killer did make it seem like he was not there to harm him at first because of the flashlight and everything, but then just unprompted, just. And one thing that bothered me that happens in all these movies I never understand. So he shot the guy and the girl in a car, but then when he starts to walk away, the guy who got shot starts moving. And I'm like, dude, just stop. Like, let him move. Yes, let him leave. And then start moving around. Because, of course, he comes back and shoots him again.
I know.
I mean, I know. This guy ends up living, but I'm like, just play it cool for a minute.
But, don't like, we're learning from their mistakes. So,
right? There you go.
We've seen it so many times now. Yeah. We know.
Just play possum. Dead. Just
play possum. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So this is 4 weeks later. Mm-hmm. So we meet Robert Graysmith, who is
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm.
Jake Gyllenhaal, of course. Yep.
I love me some Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Jakey. Little Jakey. So he works at the San Francisco Chronicle as a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. And then during like an editorial meeting, the editor receives a letter from the Zodiac about the murders and giving evidence that it was actually him that actually committed this murder.
Yeah, he gave detail that only him and the police would know about with the murder. Mm-hmm. And then he also, I put like a cipher along with the letter.
Right. This is exhausting to me. Like for him to like the Zodiac to actually create these like puzzles.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. I don't have time.
So much work.
I don't have time for that.
So much time on his hands. No.
So then we meet another character.
Robert Downey Jr.
Paul Avery.
Sure.
Okay. In this meeting and is asked to go and find out the validity of this letter and code thing. And they realize that the police and the other publications received the same letter. So basically all of the newspapers that were in town, because, well, there were newspapers back then that we don't really have now. They were all sent the same letter, the same coded thing. So I'm like, okay, all right. Because I didn't realize that he was trying to be noticed as much as
he wanted them to publish it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On the front page.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Just like a game. Ego on this man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, this is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I don't have that kind of time.
And then of course, like it's in the paper. And then the way they made it seem like they kind of a little bit like derogatory to this like couple, but they're like, oh yeah, a history teacher figured it out. And I was like, what's wrong with being a history teacher? what's wrong with that? I was like, why are you judging a man at the breakfast table with his wife? Like, let them do it.
I know. Who cares?
Right. I'm like, well, judgy, but okay.
Fun fact, though, that guy was actually deemed a suspect like right away because he solved it so quickly. So they actually looked into him. They ruled him out, but they actually were like looking into him as a suspect because it was like, how the hell did you solve that so fast?
Right.
Like, are you trying to insert yourself?
Like serial killers like want to like return back to their crimes. But if you're going to murder someone and solve your own puzzle that fast,
that's dumb.
I mean, there's a problem like a lot there.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Shell? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was going to say, like, the couple, I feel like they solved it in such a great way, too, because they were, it's really a guess, because we didn't have any clues as to, like, what kind of letters these symbols lined up with. And they just thought of what kind of words would a serial killer put in this type of cipher. Sure. And I think they had kill in there or something like that. And then once that lined up, they could just guess all the other letters.
Because it had the double letter next to it. So it made it easy to figure out if it was anywhere else or where the K and the I were. It was,
I know that I've read and heard as well that police believe that the Zodiac Killer did not think that this would be solved so quickly. Like, he thought it would take way more time than it actually did. Well,
I wonder if that, like, amped him up to do it.
Well,
like,
yeah. And I think he had a pretty big ego, if I had to guess.
Yeah. 100%.
So he wanted to, like, he's like, oh, well, I guess they're not as smart as I am.
Right.
I'm going to make this thing harder.
Uh-huh. But then he saw it as a challenge, I'm sure, and had to make the rest of them harder or more brutal or just unpredictable.
Correct.
Or just even not making any sense. Like, purposely sending in one
something that wouldn't be
never be able to be translated because it's just gibberish, which gets talked about by another person who was considered a suspect.
Correct.
We'll get to that.
We'll get there. Well, as we kind of continue, there are more letters that come in. And then we, on one of the letters that he sends in, he gives him his own self a name, mm-hmm. which, good for him. I mean,
who gives themselves a nickname? Like, that's so...
A guy with an ego. Ugh.
Again, the ego. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not even, like, really a very cool nickname. I don't know. And his symbol's not super unique. Like, I don't know. Whatever. He, like...
That's the best you got.
Right. Like, you copied cool. it. We will get there, but you copied it. Like, yeah. Okay.
That doesn't whatever. Even sound scary.
Right.
No. The Zodiac. Well, it is. I mean, after ooh. All committing all these murders.
Yeah, I mean, he's scary, but, like, not even his symbol is. I don't know. I'm just going to judge him the whole time.
I don't. So. Very it's aware. Get worse. Oh, yeah. Well aware.
Judge away.
We're judging real hard.
All right. So a month and a half later, now we're in Napa, California, September 27, 1969. And we see a story kind of play out with another couple that are laying right next to a lake at is it a national park? I don't know.
They're
some kind of park.
Cuddling on this blanket. It was cute.
It was cute.
Yeah.
Do people do that?
I don't.
I mean, I wouldn't. I'm good. I don't know.
So it involves being outdoors. I'm not super interested.
Well, yeah, you're not an outdoorsy girl. That is for damn sure. So
me neither. I feel you on that.
Lisa's the outdoorsy one of us. Or something. Okay, that's what Courtney is too. Okay, yeah. Cool. I'm going to a winery, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to Napa. I'm going to the wine country. I'm not going to go lay on a blanket somewhere. Let's be real.
Okay.
You would too.
That's true.
Okay. Anyway.
I mean, if there's wine involved, I'm down You're for there, that. Yeah. We can put the lake on another trip.
Yeah. Right? We could drive past it and just see it. Be okay. Like, oh, hey, lake. We're going to get some wine.
So as they're laying on this blanket, the girl notices that the Zodiac is like kind of off in the distance, kind of behind a tree and kind creepy. Of walking towards them.
Yeah. Super creepy.
Super creepy, mm-hmm. especially when you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Because he starts walking toward them. Yeah. And then when she notices, he ducks behind a tree.
Yeah.
She's concerned and I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend, husband, whoever he is, was like, yeah, this people are always here. And I'm like, not hiding behind trees.
No,
right. Watching he's you. Not looking. He's laying down while she's looking behind, like, because she's mm-hmm. kind of laying on his chest mm-hmm. and looking behind them. So she's just telling him what she's seeing. And he's just like, we're in a park. People are allowed to walk around. Like, so he doesn't right. actually see how weird this guy actually looks.
Yeah. And that he's got a freaking gun.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Just, so, it's too much.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, after he hides behind the tree, he starts walking towards him, and now he's got a mask on.
Mm-hmm. And he's got that Zodiac okay. symbol, like, on his chest yeah, and this, like, chest, black yeah. getup. No thanks.
Yeah.
And then, but he starts off by telling them he just wants their keys and his wallet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fine. So, they think it's just, like, being robbed, mugged, whatever. So he throws him his keys in his wallet, but of course that's not it.
No.
He tells the girl to tie his hands behind his back, which she did loosely. And I was like, good girl, because I would have the same thing. Good girl. But then of course he ends up like hog tying her, tying him tighter, and he kills them both.
Yeah. This was just
like, this one was like a totally different MO than the other one was too. So like through every kill that he's doing, he's kind of like changing up his style a bit. Cause the one with the car before, he shot both of them.
Yeah, he was shooting them. Yeah.
And then this one, he like brutally stabbed them, especially her, because the guy lives, doesn't he? But the girl doesn't.
He does. And this scene was actually recreated at the scene where it originally happened.
Oh, that's creepy.
The director went there. And the survivor went with him and like just it apparently was like almost to a T with the way that it all went down. So when you watch this, knowing that this was like exactly what happened, it makes it so much scarier. Like,
yeah,
just knowing that like, oh, my God.
It's got to be so hard for that victim who had to go back there and,
yeah, and relive everything.
And relive that. Yeah, he did say that it was like stirring up a lot for him and it was really stressful. But at the same time, he was really happy that the director was wanting to stay true to what really happened.
Yeah.
But the Zodiac, so he did have a gun, right? Mm-hmm. And then the guy asked him, because he thought that he was going to walk away and said like, hey, by the way, was that thing even loaded?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder like, if it
provoked him a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or like, did he change his mind because they were in an open lake and that maybe it would be too loud and people would hear the gunshot? So that's why he used the knife, because it was in broad daylight. So I wonder if that's why he changed his method a little bit.
I don't know.
And I'm also wondering if like like if someone approaches you with a gun and a knife, either scenario is scary, but if someone approaches you with a gun, it's definitely going to be so much more impactful and immediately scary than someone approaching you with a knife. So
right.
I'm almost wondering if he was also doing like a shock factor of like, hey, I'm not fucking around.
Right.
Right.
Follow what I'm telling you to do and then just kind of improvise from there maybe, or always knew he was going to stab him. I don't know, but I think he obviously went there.
Who knows what was in his mind?
These people then killed him. Right.
Ugh. I don't know. Well, after he stabs them, then he goes back to their car, and then the Zodiac writes the dates of the previous murders and then makes a phone call to the police about this one.
Yeah, he tells
and
where on to find the bodies. Again.
And I'm just
he tattles on himself again.
He wants the attention.
He
My
wants
God.
The attention.
Totally.
Yes. He wants the glory. He wants the credit. Like this this guy is a complete narcissist. And
yes.
Yeah, 100%.
And he loves that they have no idea. And every time he calls them, it stumps them more.
Yeah.
And they lose, like, I mean, they're further away every time from, like, trying to find out who it is or figure out who it is. And he is getting a rise out of it for sure.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So gross. I don't know. Now we're 2 weeks later, San Francisco, California, October 11, 1969. And we hear a radio station take callers on how they feel about the Zodiac. And then the Zodiac ends up killing again, and this cab driver's like murdered as he's driving.
Like he hails a cab, and when the cab driver pulls over to drop him off, he just shoots him.
Right.
Gets out of the car, goes into the driver's seat, gets something. We don't see what right away, and then he leaves.
Right.
But it's like, again, another kill, but completely different than all the other ones.
Right. Random. And he's by himself, too. Totally it's not random. A couple. Now it's just a single
just a
guy.
Random guy. Yeah.
So that doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, his MO is all over the freaking place. He just wanted
but
to kill people.
That's what makes them impossible to catch. It's like,
oh my God.
Israel Keyes.
Israel Keyes. I knew it was an eye. I was like, going to look it up. Yes.
So yeah,
that
he had no MO.
Creepy.
Terrifying. But that premeditated, I mean, that's terrifying. That he's like, I know I'm going to kill people, so I'm just going to put stuff to like get myself set up for it and just do it whenever I feel like. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
What's wrong with these people?
I don't know. I just
but that's
can't.
What's going to throw off the cops too, because they can't figure out like what is this even him. But then
right.
we find it. Then he mails in this piece of shirt from the cab driver covered in blood, and they're like, "Oh fuck!" Like, are we allowed to swear on here? I feel like,
I've
been dropping F bombs.
So no, no one stopped me. I curse all the time.
No. Yeah, we welcome it. We
and
welcome
we encourage
it. Okay. Oh yeah, we do encourage it. You know what? If you feel like something needs to come out, just say it. It's fine.
And sometimes an F-bomb is the only appropriate word. So,
for
sure.
Yes.
Just got to do it.
Okay. So we meet. Now, this is before the bloody piece of clothes. Mm-hmm. We meet another character in this movie. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how important this is.
Fine.
I'm sorry. Who
His
was
name
it?
Is Mark Ruffalo.
Okay. It's not a safe. So, yeah. He's the one that investigates that cabbie murder. Uh-huh. And then the next day is when they receive the other letter. And
because they had an eyewitness on this one, which was different than the other cases, too. There were kids across the street who saw out the window this man get out of the cab. Yeah. And they thought that he was robbing the cab driver, like shot him and robbed him and left. So they had an eyewitness. And apparently, I don't know if the cops assumed it was a black gentleman, but they originally put out on like the radio for all the cops that it's this type of person. But then the kids were like, no, he's a white male. He had glasses, a crew cut. Like this is who he was. So they had to correct what they put out there for the cops. So of course, I don't find him because they're looking for the wrong person.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which actually happened.
Yeah. Of course.
Of course they did it. Mm-hmm. Of course it did.
And he was walking around.
Yeah.
Was,
and we hear about it a little bit later
in
and it's shocking. Yeah, because he's ballsy and he's just like, whatever.
I know.
I don't give a shit. Try me.
Well, he probably heard, you know, this report go out and he's like, yeah, they're never going to find me. I'm just going to walk back up to the scene and see how everything's going.
He's like, I'm just a casual white man walking around. What are they going to do? You know? Like,
oh my God. That's crazy. Just so crazy to me. Mm-hmm. They didn't stop him. They just kind of, I think, said something in passing. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that they really like questioned the guy.
Mm-mm.
But they interacted with him.
Of course they did.
Oh my God.
Because they
so
had
crazy.
No clue.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't who they were looking for.
It's messed up.
Oh my God. Like they could have had him.
They like right then. Absolutely. 100%. So we meet, or not, we don't meet Robert Graysmith. So Robert Graysmith is kind of at the Chronicle, at the newspaper, the cartoonist. He is kind of inserting himself into this whole murder mystery thing. And he's not being welcomed with open arms.
Oh, not at all.
So they're like, dude, you're a cartoonist. So yeah, what the hell are you? What do you have to do with this?
Well, he's intrigued by the ciphers and he's like trying to figure them out. And he's intrigued by this entire case. So he's trying to help, but they really don't.
No, they don't care.
I think he's becoming more and more obsessive as well at this point and just really getting hooked in by who this person could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I understand. Like if you if you are obsessed, this is kind of like the epitome of your kind of podcast where you are obsessed with true crime and you want to, you're like questioning everything and wondering why somebody's doing something and kind of what motivates them, I guess, to kill. Yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And especially I think with Zodiac too, because what I think starts really intriguing him again is that's when they get the letter at the Chronicle that has that piece of bloody fabric in it. So it's like, I think for anybody, yes, this is scary, but I think especially if you're in that kind of, you know, journalistic kind of field, anything like this is going to be incredibly intriguing to be like, what is this guy? What is he doing? What does he want us to know? Like it's, so of course he's going to be super interested in what he's sending them. He's sending them bait, you know?
Literally.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, it's like happening in real time. Like imagine this happening now. Like it's crazy.
I know. Mm-hmm. Like I would never leave my house. Yeah, right. Ever.
But and also this movie, so much time goes by too, where it's like weeks and months and even like years at points where like before he even sends another letter to the Chronicle and it's like these guys have got to be dying to be like, what, is he just gone now? Like what is that it?
I know.
Like,
how do we did he die? Right. Is he like in jail that we know about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. So now we're at the Bureau of Criminal Identification and Investigation. That's a lot of words. It's a lot of words.
I didn't write it down. I'm like, no.
Yeah, no. No, I did. So one of the investigators, Tucci, which is, I think, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
He is taking these letters to a handwriting expert, and he gives the investigator confirmation about him being in San Francisco because these letters are starting to match, kind of. Mm-hmm. So
like the handwriting on them.
Yeah, on the handwriting. Mm-hmm. 12 hours later, this movie, and I don't know if it annoys me or if it's a good thing, but literally it's giving you 10 hours later, 12 hours later, 2 years later.
Uh-huh. A month and a half.
It's October 1975. I don't know.
Yeah, we There's have a jumps. Lot.
Yeah,
it jumps does a jump lot. A lot. So there's lots of tips that are coming into the department and the investigators talk to each other in these other jurisdictions, kind of like we were talking about before, because they're in all different places at this point. And we find one of them has a size 10 boot print from one of the murders. Mm-hmm. So there's like each of these jurisdictions have different like
pieces,
like little evidence, parts and pieces of like and not really connecting any of them. So they're trying to figure out like who they need to work with, which jurisdictions to try to solve this.
They can't even get it to each other because at one point he's like, well, we don't have a fax machine. Oh, okay, I'll put it in the mail for you. And he's like, okay, well, I'll put mine in the mail.
Like, you gotta get on a freaking plane.
And I'm thinking, like, if fax machines actually were relevant this time, like, why would a police station not have one? Like, shouldn't that be the one place that has a fax machine? He's like, no, we don't have that yet. I'm like, bitch, go get one.
Get one now.
Yeah, you might want to work on that.
Oh my God. For us, please get a fax machine.
All right. So now the Zodiac calls the Oakland PD. He calls into like a morning show.
Because he wants to speak with that like a specific attorney. Wasn't he an attorney?
No, he's an anchor. He was an anchor on the morning show. He said he wanted to talk to him.
I thought he was an attorney.
Yeah, I don't fucking know.
I feel like I couldn't understand what his profession was. Like,
because he calls seemed him like specific and wanted to talk to him on TV, like live on TV.
Okay.
Yeah, but I thought he wasn't a host. He wasn't a host on that morning show.
I don't think so.
Oh, I think I missed that.
It probably doesn't matter.
He's like zeroed in on this guy for some weird reason.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird.
And then it's weird. Mm-hmm. Like he wants to talk to him.
The police pick him up, but he's like laying in the backseat of the car. I guess he thinks he's like on this hit list or something.
Yeah.
And the whole time I can't help but think like, why are we like broadcasting this serial killer? We have no idea what he's going to say.
No.
But yeah, let's definitely put it all over the news.
Mm-hmm.
and just see what happens.
And yeah. it's like going to make people more terrified.
Look at sure. the
right. Yeah. Right. Like, what are we doing here?
I don't know. It was a hot mess and just poor decision after poor decision.
And we're also just like feeding, they're like feeding his ego at this point too. Absolutely. Like giving him the airtime, mm-hmm. like allowing yeah. him to have his like free reign to say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
It just like blew my mind. I mean,
they're publishing all of his letters in the newspaper and he's like, nah, I want more. Put me on TV now. And they're like,
of course he does.
What else do you want?
I mean, I think they probably had a reason as to why, like trying to like get him to.
You're so kind.
I know. I'm trying.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. They must have had a reason.
Let's give this serial killer the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I mean, for this. Okay, now you're making me sound horrible. No, what I'm trying to say is.
Oh, no, we're interested.
Oh, I'm going to tell you. Because I feel like I'm being judged and I don't like it. No, it's fine. I really don't care. They wanted to like get his trust mm-hmm. so that he would like keep divulging information so they right. could like figure out
maintain
who the hell he was.
Contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was like during that phone call, he hung up thinking because I guess it took back then 15 minutes for them to start tracking.
Oh my god.
A phone call?
That is way too long. Oh what? My god.
I mean, what do we run expect? A trace? I don't have a fax machine. What do we expect? You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay.
Another thing that was interesting through the investigation was they realized that the Zodiac was taking credit for a lot of other crimes and murders mm-hmm. that they realized weren't even his. Uh-huh. So he was lying as well. So they knew that he was lying. Mm-hmm. So it was crazy. Making it even harder to pin things because like I don't know, like what who's telling the truth here?
Right.
I know. And I think too, when you deep dive into this case, it's like what I think of is like, could this have been more than one person over all right. of this time? Could right. it have started out with someone and then a copycat and then someone yeah. else? Like it could have been three people for all we know.
Yeah. Well, and that's possible for sure because they put all of the information they had about this guy yeah. out for anybody to read yeah. and all of totally. His kills were inconsistent. So it literally could have been anybody or multiple people and you'd have mm-hmm. no idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's scary too.
Yeah, it is.
I love that.
God.
Okay.
People just jumping on the bandwagon.
Well, yeah, how fucked up is that?
It's can you imagine? Messed up.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we at?
They get another letter.
The Zodiac sends another letter to, mm-hmm. to the morning show host at his house.
Oh, the right. letter he gets, yeah. It has like the ingredients how to make a bomb.
Oh, that was the other one, yeah.
And another cipher. Like, okay.
Right. Why? And he had been calling his house or something while he was away.
Oh, yeah, the guy who he was talking to on that.
Oh, I kept
show.
Calling him the host, but apparently yeah. I might be wrong. I don't know.
He's an attorney. It doesn't matter what his
attorney,
profession is.
I don't know.
He was just contacting him. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, like you were saying, he was calling the attorney. God, I had his name somewhere. It's like Belli is his last name.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. But he was not home, and his housekeeper was the one answering the phone, and she actually spoke to him a couple of times. And which we mm-hmm. like hear about a little more detail later in the movie, but she was the one who kind of like intercepted the phone calls when he wasn't there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like that at all.
And the person on the phone said that it was his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So then.
And he was celebrating by killing people or something.
Oh, congratulations. Birthday. That's one thing to do for your birthday.
Happy freaking birthday.
Right? But then,
can but you then just once go buy he... cake like everybody else? Like,
oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah. God. Come on.
But they did, they looked into that and they realized that the person that was calling him at home and sending him those letters was actually mm-hmm. somebody from a mental health institution and it mm. wasn't actually the killer.
Like another copycat.
Yeah. So they debunked that and they also debunked the fact that the Zodiac's birthday was on December 17th. I think that was the day that they came down to at some point. Mm-hmm. They debunked that as well.
Oh, I did so much sleuthing. That's interesting. No, that's awesome.
I love it.
They don't. Yeah,
they don't talk about that at all in the movie.
They don't mm-hmm. say that.
That's crazy.
Did a lot of googling.
Good for for you, girl. Keep us on track.
I become obsessed. I'm like, I can't stop. I need to know everything.
Oh, God. You're going to solve the case. I love it.
Well, that's really cool because we actually were wondering, we're talking before we started recording of like how accurate this was. I mean, we know it's a Hollywood movie. Okay. It's not going to be completely accurate, but right. as far as like based on a true event, like how close was it? So it's cool that you have info like that because some of it's accurate and some of it's just right. a little bit, yeah. you know.
Like dramatized and yeah. they don't clarify some things that maybe it came about like later after the movie came out that was who knows.
Sure.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
You know what? I got chastised the last time I tried to give the benefit of the doubt. I'm just saying. Just say it. Okay. So now we're at March 22nd, 1970. And this girl is driving down the road when a car honks its horn and starts flashing its lights behind her.
Gosh.
This guy walks up and says that she has a flat tire, I think.
It was loose.
It was loose.
Her back right yeah. tire was loose. Which and is he weird. Offered to tighten the lug nuts for her. And I'm like, bitch, why did you stop your car? Like, keep driving. Don't pull over. And then when he offers, she's like, sure, because I'm a helpless damsel in distress. I'm like, no. Don't touch my fucking car.
No. Yeah. Oh,
and then she God. Has a baby oh, laying God. In the front seat. And I'm like, well, this is poor parenting, too. Everything about this well, is a bad decision.
They didn't know back then that they needed car no. seats for a child.
They had to have known in the 70s. They had to know, like, at least put a seatbelt on that kid. She's like burritoed in a blanket, just laying there.
Burritoed.
On the front seat.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Oh, poor kid.
I mean, our parents like would drink and drive back then too. Like there were right. so many things that were
there were yeah. so many things.
So
and at
different.
One point, yeah. like I don't even jump ahead. But at one point, she's like holding the baby and she like lights a cigarette while she's holding the baby. And I'm like, more poor decisions, lady. More poor decisions.
Different times. Different times.
How any of us were ever created, I don't know. How our parents lived, and then we were created, yeah. I don't know. I have no idea.
We're semi-normal.
Are we though? Are we normal?
Look at what we choose to do with our day. You yeah, know,
sure. I don't know.
Well, once he tightens her wheel,
very heavy air quotes. Yeah, yes,
heavy air quotes. He drives off, and she realizes he had loosened the bolts on the tire.
Sketchy bitch.
And now it's fallen off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
So now she's stranded.
This like kills me because yes. I'm just also. I don't even know why it would go through my head. First of all, why are you staring so closely at my tires to like mm-hmm. notice that they're loose? Like it's not like
in
a
the
flat
dark.
Tire.
No, in the dark. It's nighttime too. Yes.
It's nighttime. We're driving on what? Like a highway type road. Mm-hmm. Like it's not.
A definite road. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, why let this person even near you and right. your baby? Like study note.
Just
and
say like, oh, great, thanks. I'm going to go to the yeah. nearest gas station and I'll
why
get
don't you
to
follow
look at
me?
It.
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
If you want to follow me,
else.
Fine.
I know.
Yeah, but literally, any like decision could have made, but no.
In that day, I guess it's like, oh, the gentlemanly thing to right. do to like sure, offer right. to help and all of that. I get that. But like yeah. not surprised that her wheel then is loose as she's driving.
And completely falls uh-huh. off.
Yeah.
Of right. course. Because he comes back and he's like, well, just hop in my car and I'll drive you to the service station. And she's no. like, okay, let me get my baby. And she does. She grabs her baby.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I didn't realize you had a baby. And then she goes... Mm. Is that a problem?
Is that a problem?
I'm sorry.
No, it's not a
what
problem.
What kind of response is that?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. Is this going to be a problem?
Should I leave my baby in the car?
Right.
So you can take me to the service station? She was fine God. Laying on the front seat. Like, I don't know. And then she gets in the car with the baby, lights a cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
And then he said that her having the baby isn't a problem. And he said, more the merrier. And I'm like, fuck this guy. Fuck this guy with his
seriously.
Mind games.
Well, he ends up passing this gas station that they were supposed to be stopping at.
100%.
He gets irritated and he tells her that before he kills her, that he's going to throw her baby out the window.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how I'd react in that situation.
At least he warned her, right?
I mean.
Oh, God. Can you imagine what's going through your mind at that time? Like, how am I going to get the fuck out of this car? We're on a highway.
Right.
I don't know.
Like how,
me and my baby
how,
safe.
Right. Mm. So they jump forward and then a truck, like a semi-truck driver pulls up and mm-hmm. sees her like flagging him down. And this woman is like, does she have blood
beside
on
herself?
Her?
I yeah, thought she's that like, just yeah. her hands looked like they had blood on it, but I don't know what the blood was from because she said she jumped out of the car. Maybe it's when she hit the road. Oh,
maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe she had like a road rash thing on her, maybe. Her hands or something. Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm. Right. She, and like, the baby, she had hid the baby in like the
like a ditch,
or
like
the shrubs on the mm-hmm. side.
Yeah.
Because she said that she was terrified that he was going to come back, which is so like. Like, it's true. Just like that was terrifying.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she hid her baby in like the bushes in this like ravine ditch. So because she didn't know if he was going to come back for her or not.
But like, why didn't he go back? She was too.
Right. Because who knows how long she was waiting there before anybody else came by to help her.
It seemed like a pretty desolate road. It might have been a while.
For sure. I mean, yeah.
I don't get it. I don't.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Shell. Why didn't he roll around?
He's gone back before.
And like, right. Yeah, exactly. Like force her to get in the car or just like shoot her right then and there.
Right. Because he already made the effort to loosen her tire and then get her in the car and then just to like give up. That like none of it makes any sense.
There's no MO though.
Nothing.
Right. So maybe he's just doing something different every time almost. Mm-hmm. So like maybe he was just trying out a different way and it didn't work out.
Or maybe he immediately had some kind of connection with her and he's like, I'm not going to kill her. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. So sadistic.
Maybe this didn't go how he wanted to and he just left. I don't know.
Maybe the baby messed with him. Maybe he was like, well, he was just like, I can't kill her.
Yeah,
with
maybe it like threw him off. I don't know.
Maybe.
But they ended up finding her car and it was on fire.
Yeah. So he went back for the car, but not for her.
Which is that's weird, right? That's weird.
Well, there could have been evidence, like fingerprints, something on the car that would lead them back to him. So
maybe
could have been why
car, maybe. Yeah, could have just wiped it down.
He could have just wiped it down, but maybe it's really more like
fire. I don't know.
Yeah, because like if all he touched were her wheel nuts or the lug nuts or whatever you call them, it would only be with the
the
thing. Just tighten it with. We know what we're talking about.
You know, as like a wrench. I don't know what it's called.
The thing works that tightens them.
Yeah, but yeah, we're really car people here.
Yeah, but he obviously would have had that tool with him in his car. So what would he have honestly touched on her car, other than if he like maybe leaned down in her window and put his hand on her windowsill or something? He could have just wiped it off.
Or just trying to scare the shit out of her, maybe, too. Even more than he already did.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Then the next part of the movie, they get four more letters from the Zodiac because he's got plenty of time on his hands.
Yeah, they're like increments apart. There's like a 30 days later, an 8 days later, 2 months later, and then 4 weeks later. Like all those time periods.
Yeah. But then
they get
kind of smarter. Now.
Well, if you ghost us for a while and now you're clingy, like calm down, dude.
Well, the investigators are trying something different now. Mm-hmm. And they're telling like not to post these or not to run these letters in the newspaper just to kind of see how he reacts. Mm-hmm. The Zodiac also wants to take credit for the murders that weren't in the press. Like he's now what we were talking about before. Yeah. But he is trying to take credit for other murders that are happening, which they really realize that it wasn't him.
Because there was like 13 murders, but only like a handful of those they can actually, not confirm, but they can actually say that was him because of the information he gave or like the bloody fabric he sent in. So only a handful of those they can actually point toward him. So they're like, well, we're not going to publish any more of his shit if he's just going to keep making stuff up and lying to everybody. I don't know.
Because they don't know.
They have no idea.
Okay. So now we are at some point, we're in San Francisco and we're at the Chronicle again. And Paul, one of the, not investigators, he works at the Chronicle. Yeah, he's a journalist at the Chronicle. He opens up his mail and realizes that he has received this Halloween card from the Zodiac. Mm-hmm. So I guess he's been targeted now.
Because it has the bloody fabric in it too.
Yeah, it does. Mm. So when it's shown to the investigators, he tells Paul that he had written articles about the Zodiac. Mm-hmm. So now he was being basically targeted, which
what I liked from it is that, I mean, not liked it, but I thought it was kind of funny that everybody's wearing buttons that says, I'm not angry on it. So that if they leave the Chronicle, they don't know that it's like him.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, that's fucking crazy. They're like, don't, not me.
It's
don't
not me.
Shoot me.
It's not me. Yeah.
Oh my God. But then they show Robert Downey Jr. in the next scene, and he's also wearing a button that says, I'm not Avery, which like might be wearing 12, but I'm not Avery. It's not me.
That's okay. So, So this now part of the love story of this story. We have Robert Gray Smith. He has this date with a girl named Melanie.
Can you guys believe that Jake Gyllenhaal went on a date with someone who wasn't me? Can you guys believe that?
The nerve.
Right? Wow. How dare he? He didn't even ask if it was okay. I can't believe it. It's fine.
Should we ask your husband as well? I mean, to see if he cares?
I think if my husband was like, Jake Gyllenhaal asked you on a date, tell me everything afterwards. I think he would be like, give me all the details when you come back.
Oh my God. Well, okay, back to the story. Not about you anymore. So she tells him that it's stupid for Paul to be following up this lead in LA. And then Robert gets worried and calls his wife to make sure that he isn't in like any like grave danger about this. And I'm like, okay. All right. So then we see Paul Avery going to where the Zodiac said to meet him because that was in the Halloween card. Was it?
I don't remember. But of course, it's like this like abandoned warehouse looking place.
Of course it is. So it's now all over the news that he has solved this Riverside murder, which is the Zodiac's first victim. So we kind of like revert back to, you know, what this, I guess, his first killing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I guess they've solved it.
Well, so there was this murder that happened in Riverside, California, a few years before the ones that Zodiac was pinned to do. Like, correct, yeah. Whatever. So I guess Robert Downey Jr. goes on national TV on the news and says that this one would have to have been Zodiac too, which kind of fucks up stuff for the cops because it either gets rid of evidence or if it's not Zodiac, they now can't pin it on somebody else because correct. The evidence is all over the place and messed up and everybody knows too much about it now.
Yeah.
So of course they're all like Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo and a couple other cops are all flying to Riverside, California now to meet with the police there to find out more about this crime to see if it actually is Zodiac.
Can you not like pick up a phone?
I know.
They don't have fax machines. I'm sure have to get on a plane. That's the only way they're going to get evidence is if they like physically show up there.
They
have to wait a couple of days for it to come in the mail then.
It's true. Because you can't send evidence through a fax machine apparently.
Can't just text it, you know, whatever.
Oh
it's fine.
Oh my God. Okay.
So they're in Riverside, thank California. And they're at the police station and the police officer is telling them about this case of this college student who was out with this guy or someplace with this guy at a diner or something like that. And he left with her. And then the next day they find her dead in a parking lot.
Right.
And they show this, I guess it was her dad, her brother, and somebody else. I can't remember who the third person was, all received this letter from the killer. And the handwriting was similar to the Zodiac. And then they took out this like piece of wood. Like, what was it? Was it like, I don't know what it was. But he had like written all of this stuff in there about like cutting and cleaning and blood splatter.
I don't know why it would have been on a piece of wood.
There's like this chunk of wood they brought out. Huh. With, like a cutting board or something.
It's a cutting board. You know what? I'd put cheese on it and have a charcuterie board.
Just flip it over.
Flip it over. It's fine.
But the still Riverside, right, my cheese still looks good on it. The Riverside police didn't believe it was Zodiac, so they didn't do anything about it as far as like linking it together because they were like, well, we just don't think it's the same guy.
Correct.
And then Robert Downey Jr. kind of like blew up the whole spot for everybody with saying it's him. And then everybody's all pissed off now.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay. So now we're 8 months later in Torrance, California. It's July 26, 1971. We meet a guy that had gone fishing with the Zodiac. Mm-hmm. He is losing his job. He's been fired.
Mm-hmm.
He's being fired. I don't know why I was having trouble getting that out. He got fired. And starts like shooting kids. Like he's telling him all of this information. Like he's done all of this. He's losing his job. He's shooting. He's shot kids before.
Well, no, he said he would do it.
So yeah, he was giving his like plans of what he wanted to do.
I give up. You know what? I'm done. I don't know. I think my
There's
notes
so
are
much.
Oh my God.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
So much happened.
I think I stopped caring after this.
It's a late. What happened?
I think I stopped caring after a while. This is probably hour two of three.
You're like, are we going to ever catch this guy?
We get it.
But this guy, I think used to work with him. I worked at a school and he got fired because apparently he was disgusting toward children. Yes.
Right. Yeah. He was molesting the students.
Yeah, he's a disgusting person if we didn't get that already. So he went fishing with him or got a beer with him or whatever it was. He knew this guy and he basically laid out his entire plan of I would kill someone. I would use a flashlight at the end of a gun. I would shoot a tire on a school bus. And when the kids came off, I would shoot. Like, he had everything that has happened so far, he laid out for this guy, like, in 1968, like, well before any of this stuff happened.
Yep.
Right. And he his friend is like, this guy is the Zodiac. Like,
mm-hmm. Right.
And he said he tried to call the cops about it when this guy was telling him about it. But again, of course, it just gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
How something like that gets lost, I don't know.
Well, maybe somebody just didn't write something down.
Just didn't care.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Didn't take it seriously.
This guy ends up giving his name, Arthur Lee Allen. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like the first time we hear this name.
Mm-hmm. First suspect, I guess.
Correct. Yes, right? I think he was like the biggest suspect this entire, like, from now on. Mm-hmm. He was always like, it's this guy. Mm-hmm. And they were just trying to prove it, or all of these murders, they were trying to connect back to him. But I don't, there obviously gaps, it never happened.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the investigators do some digging on Allen, and he was fired from his job, and that he can write with his other hand because they were having problems looking at his letters. Mm-hmm. Correct. So it's not just one hand. You're going to write different with your other hand, mm-hmm. even if it's the same person. So they kind of figured that out. Well, not really figured it out, but they realized that that could be an issue.
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So now we're one day later in is it Rodeo, California?
Sure.
I don't know. It's like Rodeo. Rodeo, California. I don't know where that came from. So we're at August 4th, 1971, and the investigators go to see Allen at his job. And then they tell him that they are investigating the Zodiac murders. And he said that he doesn't know anything about them and stopped listening to the reports after the first couple's murder.
Oh, yeah. It just scared him.
It just scared him. It did make him uncomfortable, right? Yeah. So
he's also like talking too much during the interview.
He gives too much information.
Yeah, he was like super smug. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, very smug.
Find a way to arrest him. Yeah.
Because he got an ego. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really think it was him.
But even the way he was sitting, like, he's so like overly relaxed. He has his legs crossed, like his hands folded. And he's just
leaning
in his chair.
Yeah.
He just doesn't give a shit that he's being investigated by three police officers. Doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? Mm. I don't know. I guess he thought he wasn't going to get caught because, again, ego.
Well, and he hadn't been, so.
Right.
And then Mark Ruffalo notices his watch, so he asks him to see it, and the brand of the watch was Zodiac, and it had the same symbol that he copied and used as his, like, signature. So they're all noticing his watch, and he gives it back to him. And he told them, too, like, even if he said, I'm not the Zodiac, but even if I was, I wouldn't tell you anyway. And I'm like, well, like, why are you saying shit like that?
I don't know.
He's very suspicious. Like,
why? Yeah. So suspicious. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know.
It's that ego again.
Well, he ends up also, before the interview's over, giving himself an alibi. But the alibi is not really a valid one because the person who would have, like, validated this action or whatever he did had a heart attack and died.
Yeah. Okay. He's like, well, I got home at 4. My neighbor saw me. You could ask him, but he died in whatever year because of a heart attack. They're like, why would you say that?
Oh, and by the way.
Yeah, why would you say that?
Yeah, right. And by the way, when you go check my car, there's going to be knives in there and they've got blood on them. But they're chickens.
They didn't even ask about it.
No.
And he's like, here, I have this and stuff in my car. Like,
they didn't even ask him about the knife. He said, well, he said something like, if you see like bloody knives.
It's from a chicken I killed.
Like, that's disgusting, first of all, if that's so true. Gross. Like,
why would you keep that in your car?
I don't know.
That's super messed up.
Yeah. I have in my notes that they all started like getting spidey senses that this guy was like not legit and like
something off about him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they go to talk to Allen's brother, and this guy confirms everything.
Like, he's basically like, my brother's fucking crazy. You should arrest him now.
Exactly. But when they go to try to match his handwriting doesn't match. Which
of course.
I feel like we already determined that if he's ambidextrous. Did I just say that word right?
I think so.
Because I feel like I went with it, but I don't know if that's right.
That sounded right.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. That it would be different. All right. So then now we're 1 year later, and Paul says that he wants to be in charge of the Zodiac case. Mm-hmm. His boss is not convinced and tells him that he's drunk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, you're not going to do this. This is not for you. So the investigators do their due diligence, and they talk to people who are like willing to give their testimony under oath, because people are afraid of this guy. Mm-hmm. So like, they don't want to go, you know, in trial and, you know, potentially get killed. Like,
or piss this guy off.
I mean, who knows?
Whatever. And the guy who told them that, I guess, went on that fishing trip with him, who told them the whole story about this is what he laid out, said that he would swear under oath at that legitimately.
Yeah, but
happened.
Then didn't he back right. out?
I think he followed through.
He did it?
Like nothing yeah. for this case ever has like a complete end to it. It's like they hit a right. roadblock at every next step. I know. It's like, it's so frustrating.
It's true. They do.
So now we're at September 14th, 1972, Santa Rosa, California. We are in the Sunset Trailer Park, space A7.
That's a lot of detail.
Why? Why do we need to know that?
I didn't even write that. Good for you.
Well, I write things and then sometimes I write things and then I don't know what I'm writing. Or they don't make sense.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is super useful.
You're right.
A7. What, like, this is
again? Sure.
Oh. Like, sometimes they show it to you on purpose because they might right. like circle back to it, like mm-hmm. foreshadow.
Well, this one,
this
they
mind.
Never do.
They don't. It doesn't make any sense. Okay. So the investigators are at Alan's trailer. He isn't there.
Of course
but
not.
They decide to go into his house anyways, which that's not a thing. Like you can't just walk into somebody's house.
It was unlocked. They just helped themselves, you know, whatever. Okay.
Do they have a search warrant though?
I don't think at this point they did.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely not okay.
Right.
I don't think so. But don't they? I don't know. What it is.
They were just going to go ask him some questions and then just
well,
walk
I think
right
also, because isn't this like where they ended up getting a second opinion about the handwriting? So I think since they had somebody else say that
maybe.
It could be still him. They got some mm-hmm. type of like grounds to go there. None of it made sense. I don't know.
I don't have answers. I don't know. Well, they go into the house or into the trailer, and then they find squirrels in cages.
A lot of squirrels.
Kind of running around. Why? What
like,
are we
running loose in the trailer and also one specifically in a cage? And I don't know.
What's the reason? Why?
It was just gross.
How do you catch a squirrel like
and,
that,
like,
really?
Leave those poor squirrels alone. Let them go hang yeah. out in a tree or something. Yeah. What squirrel do to you?
Let them click their nuts. So they start talking to neighbors, and they said that he left, like, about 30 minutes ago. But they, like, look through everything and
not wearing gloves either.
No. And they
just touching
stuff. Gloves.
No.
None.
God. And they take shit.
They like, find guns of his, and they're just, like, with their fingertips, like, no gloves, just touching. Hey, guys, like, stop touching
happening?
Stuff. Awful.
This is not how.
Shouldn't be, like, police 101. Like, if you're at a scene, don't touch shit.
Maybe the Zodiac has, like, created these new things because they really screwed it up.
I'm like, can someone put a pair of gloves on, please? No? Okay.
No.
He's like, hey, look at this shotgun. I'm like, stop touching stuff. It's too much.
Well, someone ends up pulling up and they realize that it's this Alan guy. Mm-hmm. So they go out to greet him, which was very uncomfortable for me. I didn't like that whole scene. But they
is it because his shorts were way too short for him?
There was a lot.
That was uncomfortable.
So they run this guy through all of the tests at the police department and nothing is matching.
Of course not.
No. So Tucci gets up and he ends up leaving. Like, I think he's like done with this.
Off.
Well, he's throwing a little tantrum. It's fine. So now at the movie theater, they are showing the letters of the Zodiac. So they have like created this whole like movie.
Yeah.
What?
I don't.
Why?
I don't know how that's a thing if it's an open investigation. Like, how can that be?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. But Robert Graysmith is there. And he goes to introduce himself to Tucci because I guess he knows that this guy is investigating and he wants to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells him that he's going to catch him. He's like, okay, whatever.
Kind of blows him off. Yeah.
Okay. So now we're jumping 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been 4 years
mm-hmm. and nothing.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. So we see Paul Avery. He's left the Chronicle. And that Tucci's partner is transferring departments. And then Robert Graysmith is married to his girlfriend. So,
yeah. They got a baby. They got a baby.
And he's like buried himself so
deep. Oh my God.
Into
obsessed.
The investigation. He's mm-hmm. obsessed.
Again,
like
obsessed.
Taking over his mm-hmm. life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and this
yeah.
actually
and
happened.
His house. It's taking yeah. over his house too. There's like files
Boxes.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This actually happened in real life too. Like he just became so obsessed with this that it put a strain on his marriage. And I think that's what led to their divorce. And it, like
yeah,
he actually says like, yeah, this is for sure like contributed to the end of my marriage, which is like crazy.
That is
that's
crazy.
How invested he was.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we see Robert, who goes to Paul Avery's houseboat because now he lives on a houseboat.
He's not looking so good.
No, he's a heavy drinker. He likes the alcohol. So Robert tells him that Paul should write a book about the Zodiac to kind of like shake things loose. Like he wants, because he knows that this guy, if it's the same guy that's doing all these murders, but he knows that he has an ego about him. So if he writes a book and kind of like says some things that maybe he'll like come back and
surface again.
Yeah.
Kind of like, yeah, poke the bear a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he's also hoping that if they get another, like 4 years later, get another fresh look at all of the evidence that they have on it, maybe they've missed something.
Or, right.
Yeah. He's not open to it at all.
No.
He said he threw like in the water or got rid of all the evidence he has, like just threw it out.
Okay.
That's helpful. That's for everybody involved.
No. I don't know. So Paul tells him that he just needs to let it go. And well, we obviously know that he's not going to be able to do that. And then he just kind of leaves. So now we're at October 11, 1977 in San Francisco at the corner of Washington and Cherry, which this was the same location of the cab driver murder. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Right. Yes. Okay. Which also, another fun fact, they filmed it at the same spot as well.
Oh.
Yeah. Director was like so like.
He did his homework.
Yeah. Everything was filmed in San Francisco for the most part. And yeah. They went to the corner there and filmed it in the same spot, which is like.
That's so hard. I don't know. Yeah. That's a lot. Drumming up a lot of extra memories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they get to this corner and Tucci sits and he just waits in his car. And then he ends up just driving off. So I guess I don't know what he was waiting there for. Like, just does he randomly go and sit in this like corner?
I don't know. See if he thinks of something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, is he trying to like have like some sort of like epiphany or something's going to come back to him and like kind of click and. Makes sense.
I don't know. Robert goes to visit Tucci at the police department. He asks to buy him lunch, and obviously, if he's anybody like you or I,
or interested,
free food
immediately.
Free food.
But also, like Tucci, Mark Ruffalo's character is eating like the entire movie, so of course he's like lunch. Okay, sure. I can squeeze it in.
I like food. So during lunch, Robert asked Tucci about the Zodiac and, you know, like what's going on with it? Like, what are they investigating? Where are they at with it? He tells him about, you know, wanting to help. And then Tucci tells him to go see Ken Narlow. Mm-hmm. Like he said, he didn't say to do it, but he's like,
I can't help it, but maybe Ken and Napa can.
Correct.
But, yeah.
Because Jake Gyllenhaal's character starts doing all this research on like he has all these books on like basic codes and like learning codes. And he started looking into libraries or military bases that would have these books. And he found that several different military libraries had these books, but they were all reported stolen from the library. So it's just evidence of somebody checking them out.
Signing them out. Yeah.
Yeah. So when he gets to go see this Ken Narlow guy, he sends him to go see Jack Mullinax. I don't know how to say his last name. It's Mullanax. I don't know. So here he reiterates that the case is all but dead. And so he shows him like this evidence room. He's like, okay, dude, if you're going to want to like come in here, fine. You can go see the evidence room. You can't take any pictures. You can't take anything.
Can't write anything down.
Mm-hmm. But you can like get all the information that you want out of it. So
as much as you can memorize. Good luck.
I mean, if he's anything like me,
it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. So he finds like these boxes, does his little research. He runs out of this building, like when he's done with it, just so he doesn't forget all the information, and then just starts like writing down everything that he can remember.
Yeah, he like runs into a diner, grabs a napkin, and starts writing all over this napkin.
So crazy.
To like reiterate what he has. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. So one of the cops asks, you know, Mullinax who this was, like that was running out of the building. And he says that it was a cartoonist that he says he's going to solve the Zodiac. So he's of like, course, cool. They're kind of laughing at him because they're like, okay. So he goes to talk to Tucci that night and he kind of brushes him off and can't really give him any information, but he tells him that he needs to go talk to, I put the show host, Melville. So is he the show host?
His name is Melvin Belli.
Oh, I have Melville. Maybe I combined the name.
Looks like it, yeah.
Things were happening so fast. You got to jot things down. It's just
no, and I so did. Much. And again, I wrote it a second time, Melville. It's, I don't really know what
quick abbreviation.
Oh God!
But it didn't even really work for you though, because it just confused you more.
No, it did. It absolutely did. Okay, so
he found out quickly. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Why he was going to go talk to Belli was because he realized that Zodiac had to have known Darlene, which I think was the first kill he had, or I can't remember if that was the first kill or the one that we saw, the first one we saw.
I think the second one, the first one that we saw.
The one that we saw with the two people in the car.
In the movie. Yes.
So he realizes that Zodiac had to have known her because he also called like her relatives like 90 minutes after her death and just like awkwardly heavy breathing on the phone.
Right.
And then hung up. But that's the only kill that that happened for. So he thinks that he had to have known her directly.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Is that really? Okay.
Anyways. I mean, it works.
I mean, it does. So he waits to see this host guy.
I think he's still an attorney. Okay.
Attorney.
But you know, whatever.
At his house. He's obviously running 2 hours late because, well, he probably doesn't give a shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Robert ends up talking to the maid who says that she's actually spoken to the Zodiac. And the Zodiac said that he had to kill that night, the night that he was talking to her, because it was his birthday. Mm-hmm. Robert, like, scrambles to, like, get his pad and paper out and figures out that December 18th was his birthday. Now, you had information about what was it? Was it this? I don't know when was his birthday or when did he claim to have his birthday?
It was the 17th or the 18th. I can't remember.
Okay. But then they kind of debunked it.
They debunked it. It was somebody from the institution that was being hospitalized and they were not well.
Okay.
They were not well.
No, not so much. Okay, so Robert gets home that night. Melody isn't looking all that happy, and she asks him about the article in the paper about him quietly shopping around to produce this Zodiac book. And then Melanie thinks that it really isn't safe for him to do that because he's putting himself out there and attracting probably the Zodiac. Like, she's worried about her family now that she's got kids.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
He's putting a target on them.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's putting his name out there. They know that the Zodiac reads the article. I mean, the newspaper he works for. So he's just putting all of his information out there. And it gets worse. But,
it does get worse. So Robert then gets a call from someone who says that he knows who the Zodiac is and tells him to talk to somebody named Vaughn, who is the Zodiac's friend. So he says that the name of the killer is Rick Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, there's so many names.
And that, I guess that guy Vaughn has an empty canister of the Zodiacs because he would record like kills or record something and he's just told to hold empty canisters, like film canisters.
It's weird. I don't understand that. Okay. So Robert goes to talk to the handwriting expert now himself. And they talk about getting a call from someone claiming to know the Zodiac's name.
Mm-hmm.
And then that night, Robert gets a call with the heavy breathing.
Yeah.
Like just the heavy breathing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like his wife was a little skeptical at that point.
She was way too calm about it.
I don't know. I don't know if I would have stayed in that house with him. Well, she doesn't. She ends up leaving.
Well, long story short, she does not.
No. So Robert does his due diligence and gets a copy of Rick Marshall's handwriting. Mm-hmm. And the handwriting expert says that, again, they don't match. So is he using two different hands? Is it not the same person? Like nobody really knows.
Mm-hmm.
So Tucci gets a call that the Chronicle has received a letter from the Zodiac with Tucci mentioned in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the internal affairs people they're kind of talking to him, obviously. And the news does a report that Tucci is the one that wrote the letter. So like there's like now he's being targeted because now they think he's the Zodiac.
Yeah. Or sending them bullshit letters
That's ridiculous.
I just don't understand. And then Robert and Melanie's marriage is obviously being destroyed by this Zodiac.
Yeah. Because he deciphers one of the Zodiac's codes and now he's on TV talking about it. So now his face is actually out there for everybody to put a face to a name.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She mad.
She's not happy.
Not happy at all. So, and then Robert talks to this Vaughn guy and asks about Rick Marshall. And then he realizes that the handwriting that he's been researching is Vaughn's.
Well, because he meets up with him.
Right.
He goes to his house. Yeah.
Yeah. He meets up with him and he's like, oh, meet me at this coffee shop. And he's like, no, come to my house. And
which
I'm like,
is
why?
Sketch.
He does it, but why? Okay. So Jake Gyllenhaal is there talking to him and he's like, oh, do you know anything about this Rick Marshall guy? He used to do these posters for this movie theater they used to work at. And the guy whose house he's at is like, he never did the posters. I did all the posters. I wrote them all. I did all the drawing on it. So me and Jake Gyllenhaal are like, oh God, get out of the house.
He's a killer.
That's the killer. Get out of the house. Well, that's what they want us to think. We don't really know.
Yeah.
So, and then of course that guy Vaughn is like, oh, I have the videos that you want in my basement. And I'm like, oh yeah.
Come down to my basement.
Definitely go into a sketchy ass basement with him, please. And he's like, not many people in California have basements. He's like, I do. Come on. Yeah. And he does. And it's like dark and spider webs down there. And mm-hmm. the basement is gigantic. Like, it just looks way too big for the house. That's a pet peeve I have with a lot of horror movies we watch. Like, people go into basements and the basements are twice as big as the houses. And I'm like, what's happening? Does that make sense?
Another thing that was freaking him out was, I think at some point in one of the Zodiac's letters, he mentions that he has a basement.
Yeah.
And I guess that was something that stuck out for them because a lot, like he said, a lot of houses in California or San Francisco don't have basements. Mm-hmm. So when he's at this guy's house, he's like, you have a basement.
Sketchy. And
like, yeah, come down. So this actually is something that he describes in his book as something that does happen. Like, the reenactment of this is like pretty similar to what happens.
Creepy.
So like in the basement, this guy's acting like super like ominous all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So
and he
creepy.
Hears noises
and there's he was asking him, upstairs.
Yes.
Oh my
he's
God.
Like, do you live alone? Because he can hear people walking upstairs.
No.
And he's like, I thought you were alone. He's like, I am. And he's like,
you're like, but are you?
What? Yeah. But this, apparently that happened. 100%. Like he was there and he was like, he fucking heard like footsteps upstairs and he got so freaked out. So that's true story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and when he goes to run out of the house,
no,
of course the deadbolt is like with a key and not an actual lock on it. I'm like, he's gonna get murdered. He's gonna get murdered and die.
Yeah.
But like Vaughn just shows up like super calm, fucking with him again, unlocks the door and he just like takes off.
Lets him bolt out the door. Super
that's
weird.
So crazy.
I don't know. Yeah, I think if you follow someone to your house, like to like their house, you don't know them. And as soon as you go in the house, they like lock the door. No.
That's not a good sign.
Red flag.
No.
Yeah.
Have the guns.
You go back. So Robert gets home after this night and realizes that his whole family's gone. Like Melanie is has
Packed
taken
up.
The kids. Yep.
Yeah.
Taken it, taken them to like, her mother's deuces. House, mm-hmm. I think. And then he goes to talk to Linda in jail. So Linda is
Darlene's sister.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The first person we saw got killed.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So he goes to visit her in jail. And the creepy guy, she calls him the creepy guy during the painting party that they had. So she knew him or knew of him, but really didn't know his name other than it was, I think, Lee.
Mm-hmm. And she said that her sister was creeped out by him too. Darlene was like, don't talk to him. He's weird. He just kind of showed up at one of their parties. He like hung out in the corner, like on a chair and just like watched everybody.
That's creepy.
Mm-hmm. That's creepy. And then said his name was Lee. And then of course starts like going back to Arthur Lee Allen. And
he wanted it to be Rick. He was set 100%.
He was like
Rick
pushing
Marshall.
It on her.
Yeah.
Like, are you sure it wasn't him? Yeah.
Because she was like, it was a short name. I can't remember what it was. And he's like, it was Rick, wasn't it? And she's like, no. And then when he starts walking away, she's like, it was Lee.
Mm.
And that's Arthur Lee Allen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then he's like, holy shit, we are going right back to square one. And then he's just dead set on that for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. When he goes to tell like the police after he had this meeting, nobody believes him. Like nobody, they're like, no, this isn't the guy. Like you're barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah. They're like, trust me. Like we've looked into all of this. Like nothing matched. Like his writing didn't match.
Partial fingerprint didn't match.
Yeah.
Because everything they were basing off of was the handwriting and the fingerprint. That's the only thing that they were basing this entire case off of the police was just those two things.
Correct.
Right.
So now Robert shows up at Tucci's house, banging on his door, like in the middle of the night. And when he opens the door, he's like, dude, what are you doing? And he screams like Arthur Lee Allen, like this is who it is. And he says, you know, it was his birthday and kind of goes into all of this information that he has found out. Then they end up going to a cafe, I guess, down the street and talk about all of the evidence that they ever had about this guy to see if, I guess, anything matched because obviously, Tucci was like, you've got something. Like, I feel like you've uncovered something. So he's like floored by all the evidence that Robert has found and says that he can't do anything with this and that he needs to just like finish his book. Like, there's nothing to be done with this case anymore. It's been like
because all signs do, as far as what he has, point to Lee. But if they're only going off of the handwriting and the fingerprints, then they have nothing.
Correct.
The whole case is
it's like
gone.
All circumstantial evidence, though, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not concrete. It's
coincidences.
Hard.
A lot of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. And it could be like bias as well if he's really thinking that it's him and trying to make the facts fit what he wants it to fit, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So on December 1983, Robert goes into a hardware store and finds Arthur Lee Allen. Like this is where he is working at this, I guess, at this time. So he asks if he can help him. Robert stares at him like very awkwardly and then just kind of walks out.
And they like stare
they just have
down.
Like a stare down.
What was
and
that?
Like, it's kind of like they both knew.
They both recognize each other. Like, because they made it seem like after Lee was staring at Jake Gyllenhaal for a minute, his face changed to be like, like he recognized who he was. Yeah. And they're just staring at each other. And then that was that whole scene.
Yeah, that was it.
Nothing ever happens again with that.
Nope.
Okay.
Do you want to know what really happened in real life?
Yes, of course.
I know all the facts.
Because this scene was not very satisfying for me, so I need to know more. Yes.
Well, it's kind of like even less satisfying in a way, but like Graysmith did go to the hardware store that Alan worked at. Only what happened was he pulled up to the store and then Alan pulled up right next to him in his car, and he was so close to him that Graysmith couldn't open his driver's side door. And basically, Alan just like stared him down in the car. And like, that's kind of the end of what.
Oh, so it wasn't in the actual store. It was
but like
outside of it.
Yeah. And it kind of seemed like he was aware of who he was and like pulled up right next to him and was like, the hell are you doing here?
Like taunting him.
Exactly.
Kind of. Yeah. Like blocked him in. So that's apparently what happened. That's, I think, what is said in the book, or maybe he says something about it later with interviews or something. But yeah.
That's a lot creepier.
That is
a
lot creepier.
Walking into a store and like staring each other down and then leaving.
Right. Yeah. Because he knew that he was there. Like he obviously blocked him in for a reason.
Yeah.
Which is super ballsy of Graysmith to go there though. If he's so convinced that he thinks that this is him, like holy shit.
And that's so laying ballsy. It out. He's putting all of his cards on the table because he's telling him, like, I know it's you. And it's like, Lee has no idea that he's a suspect as far as Graysmith's concerned.
Correct, yeah.
So he's just flat out calling him out in a way. And I'm like, you're going to get yourself killed. I keep thinking that the entire movie. Yeah. It doesn't happen. I keep thinking he's going to die somehow.
I know.
Never does.
All right, now we are 7.5 years later. And the investigators talked to Michael Majot.
He was the guy from the first scene with the girl.
Correct.
Yep.
So he's asked to pick out the guy that shot him in a lineup, and he actually chooses. He's like, this is the guy, and who it was, Arthur Lee Allen.
Like, immediately points to him.
Immediately, yeah. So when they, I guess when they go to see Arthur Lee Allen to charge him, he has like this heart attack and just dies. Like he's not.
That's like the on-screen text at the end of the
movie. That's what it is. And so obviously it's still an open investigation. And then Allen remains the only prime suspect in this entire thing. So.
Yeah. Which is, they actually have at least four like major suspects. And I was reading about like connections with all these other people that they mentioned, and it's like, oh my god, there is a lot of circumstantial evidence against all of them. And it's the only thing that I keep going back to is the description of him and what these people look like, because all we have is the description from the guy that survived at the lake. And the guy that survived in the first scene in the car, he said himself, I don't know how reliable my witness account really was because he was shining this light in my face. He's like, all I could tell was that he had a round face, right?
And it was
like,
22 years later that they actually even asked him to identify a person. So over 22
years. That's hard to do.
So he's like, I wasn't even really looking at him because he's like, I was looking kind of forward because when he came up to the car, he thought it was going to be a cop, right? So he's like, I didn't even really get a look at the guy, to be honest. So.
But he sounded so sure when he was like looking at the lineup, which is weird.
I know. So I don't know. Like he apparently did identify him in that lineup. So I found that really hard to believe that he would just fluke pick him.
Right. Sure. And be so confident about it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like that's crazy that he would pick him out after all those years. But again, they haven't really held on to it too tightly because of how he said it was just so hard to see with that bright light.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I don't know.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre. And like, what was the description from the girl who with the baby in the car? Like, what was her description of the guy?
That would seem to be the most accurate one, because the guy who was stabbed, wasn't he wearing some type of like mask or something too, or something over his face?
Yes. Yeah. So all he would have is a body. Like a
reliable source either. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a body.
Yeah. He could
type.
Describe his body type and his voice, mm-hmm. but the girl in the car could describe his face. And
also the witness from the cab driver who saw the guy run off. Like they were kids, right?
They were kids. Mm-hmm. I know.
I mean, that's the most detailed description they got was from those kids.
Right.
Otherwise, everybody else was just a voice or something.
Right. And he was wearing glasses, right? Like they said he was wearing glasses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, okay. And so in the 70s, that's literally every guy. Like every man.
Like an average guy in the 70s.
Right. And they said that this guy was wearing a size 10 like military boot. But didn't they all go to... were they all in the Navy? Weren't they all
in the military? And there's a lot of military bases in California, too. So that doesn't narrow anything down either. I don't know.
So, so much Oh, and then, where I'm jumping forward, like years down the line now, mm-hmm. where like DNA testing has now advanced, they actually were able to get DNA, which was kind of weak, from the saliva on the envelopes. And they tested it against when Arthur Lee Allen died. They took a sample of his brain tissue from his autopsy and tested it against the DNA on the envelopes that had been sent in. And apparently it's not a match.
Interesting.
Yeah. But.
So was it him or not him?
It's not satisfying at all. We have no idea.
I know.
So, and then also the movie like makes it seem they want like you to feel it's, like Arthur Lee Allen is.
It is more biased in that.
Because they want to give you an answer. They don't want to leave you hanging at the end of the movie. But like, personally, I don't actually think that it was him. I personally, I actually don't know. I think it's more than one person. That's kind of like after I've listened to like so many podcasts on this. I think in the end, I'm quite convinced that it's more than one person.
A lot of copycats.
That would make sense.
Yes.
Because it leads you toward them, and then we go away from them, and then we go back to it at the end. And I also, I agree with you, Shel, because I think it makes sense for it to be more than one person, because most of these stories you hear about a serial killer, they have an MO, they have a type, they're consistent, they have like a signature in a sick way. But with this guy, it's a literal free-for-all.
It's
There's nothing consistent, except for the first two happened to be in a guy and a girl. But like the death wasn't even the same, you know? It really is just like multiple people doing it. So I do find it hard to believe that it's just one guy just not having a style in a way.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because he clearly was he was making a style with the way that he was interacting with the cops, with the ciphers, his letters, and the way that he was leaving stuff at the scene, like his notes or his little like blood written things or whatever. So it does seem that he would be kind of strategic about the way that he was doing it. So it would make sense that it would be more than one person then, because
so we start off line with up him more. And then it
right
it just like veers off.
Doesn't make any sense.
I have a couple of fun facts from the movie, since you had fun facts on the real stuff from the movies.
Bring it on.
So the Zodiac case was actually reopened after the release of the movie. Clearly nothing was really found concrete on that, but I guess it was. So the murder victims' costumes in the movie were meticulously recreated from forensics evidence that was lent to the production crew.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's pretty cool. So they he tried to like be as specific and detailed.
Gray Smith and Avery were not actually friends in real life, like the movie portrays them to have like this
interaction
relationship that they have. They were not like, it was completely
you mean they didn't go grab
movie.
Drinks with each other like they did in the movie?
No, they sure didn't.
No, like they that sure scene didn't. Where he's at dinner with his date, right?
Yeah.
And he's worried about him. That never happened.
No.
Because they didn't talk. Like that wasn't
they
their
had no relationship.
Relationship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that scene just was made up just to dramatize and add filler or whatever.
I'm pretty sure
that didn't need any more filler than it already had. But.
No, 3 hours was enough.
We didn't even need to have a relationship. It contributed nothing to the movie.
I know, it really didn't.
Other than having Jake Gyllenhaal and
Robert Downey Jr. just drinking together.
Yeah.
In order to save time, David Fincher, the director, decided to digitally add all the blood from the murder scenes into the movie after.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it looked legit.
They did it. Yeah, it was very good.
They did a good job.
Very well done.
The last one I have is just a fun fact for us, that the blue cocktail that Robert Downey Jr. and Jake Gyllenhaal were drinking was made of vodka, gin, lemon, lime, and blue curacao.
Oh, I can drink
so
that.
Easy.
100%.
Oh, simple. And they downed like 10 of them.
Yeah. I know. That was fantastic. Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I did like when he was like, I can't not go dressing this anymore. Right. He's like, we should talk about this.
Yeah. What is happening here?
Okay. And the last thing we got is...
Are you prepared?
I am very
impressed.
I'm prepared.
Okay. So this time.
So anytime we do like a collaboration episode, we always do random like would you rather questions.
It's just
kind of our thing. Nice. Talk about an MO. It's our thing. It's fine. So I have like four. Courtney doesn't know about these either. So you can participate too.
Okay, thanks. I get so nervous.
But there's no wrong answer.
I
just like a random.
No. Okay, go.
Okay, I tried to keep them all. Well, actually, I think one is super random, but I tried to keep most of them somehow on brand, either like Scary Movie or True Crime, whatever. But I can only be so creative, guys, and Google so much. Okay, so would you rather face a chainsaw-wielding serial killer or a terrifying mutant monster?
Ooh.
Chainsaw.
I agree with that.
I could disarm him.
Or get away somehow.
Yeah, yeah. I could run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of mutant monster?
Yeah, what kind of mutant monster are we talking about? Like, how big are they? How fast can they run?
Is that worth finding out? I don't know.
there's too many variables here. I'm sticking with something that I know, which is chainsaws.
Because, like, even if you do accidentally get cut by the chainsaw, you're not going to turn into a mutant monster. If you get bit by a mutant monster, you're screwed.
Who knows what your outcome is at that point?
Well, if you think it's a zombie, maybe, but I'm still going for the mutant monster. I feel like I wouldn't feel as bad killing it, like, or like going after it.
Okay.
I don't know. I just feel like a chainsaw is in my way. I'm like 5 foot nothing. There's no way. I'm getting like chopped in half for sure.
It does seem like it'd be hard to get around a chainsaw.
Yeah, it would be hard. Even with my like dodging skills, it would be tough. I feel like
how
I might
are your
be
dodging
to, like,
skills? Are they good? Are those that like
they're pretty
you have good
like,
dodging
I'm
skills?
Low center of gravity, like I can just dart in and out. But
like
I feel
ninja.
Like
like a ninja.
Yeah.
With a mutant though, I could like have a weapon and maybe have a fighting chance. I don't know.
Okay,
I like the weapon
or cause a distraction or something.
Yeah, what kind of weapon would you have?
In my head, I was thinking some sort of sword. I don't know. Oh. Like, where would I get that? I have no idea.
I would love it if you could have it on your back and be prepared.
That's mine. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
I've also like probably read like too many fantasy novels lately, like fiction fantasy. So that's probably where this is all coming from.
You're like, I can disarm a mutant monster, not a chainsaw. It's right. Fine. Yeah. Okay. Okay, this one's super random. Nothing to do with scary movies or anything.
Okay.
Would you rather have 5 half-size clones of yourself or 1 full-size clone of yourself?
Oh. Wait a minute.
So, like myself.
Probably, like the
you,
half-size.
Like, half the size of you, and there's be 5 of you.
Huh.
Or, like, 1 normal-size Courtney. So, there'd be, like, 2 of you then.
I do the half-size. You get so much more done.
It sounds efficient for sure.
Yeah. Like you're closer to, absolutely. No, I think I do the
And like, no one's going to get you confused with the other clones because you're the
Are you just going to like put yourself to work? Is that what you're going to do? And be like,
that's exactly what she's
going to
do.
You guys take care of my
life. Yeah. No, that's what,
I'll go live life.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go for the full size because now I just thought like I could send the full size me to do things that I really don't want to do.
That was where my head was at too. I was thinking full size me. 100%. That was my first thought was standing.
Like a It Takes Two scenario. Mm-hmm.
But I do like your, like all the little like
minions.
Yeah.
Your little minions doing your work for you. I kind of love that. I'm just going to like sit on my throne as they do all the work.
I do like that. I like that.
It's efficient.
It's efficient.
Okay, would you rather be trapped in a romantic comedy with your enemies or be trapped in a horror movie with your friends?
Oh, horror movie with my friends.
Horror movie. Partnership, partner work right there. Yeah, we're getting out of this. I am like,
Oh, yeah, God. I'll shank somebody.
I've lived a horror movie with an enemy, and it's you don't want it.
Yeah, that rom-com would turn into a horror movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you don't want it.
It would. So yeah. Inevitably, you'd be in a horror movie with
your enemy.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It'd be bad.
It would turn into a horror movie.
I want to know more detail. I know this is the question that I said, but now I'm like, I need to know more. I want to know, like, what kind of horror movie is it? Is it like a paranormal one? Is it like a serial killer one? Is it like a zombie one? Because for me, that would play a huge role in it. Because I feel like paranormal, like, who gives a shit at that point? That I feel like people.
Well, because it doesn't bother you.
Not afterwards, no. But if it's like, I don't know, I would want to know what kind of movie it is.
Okay. Well, now that you don't get those answers.
I could probably
kind of like the mute monster.
I should have added to that question.
Yeah, yeah. Could be more specific. Paranormal, though, like that to me is like the scariest of all horror for me.
Interesting.
Are the paranormal ones? Yeah, like Paranormal Activity. Those movies, mm-hmm. like gives me like a gag reflex just like thinking about it. So, oh God, no.
They bother like the paranormal ones bother me a lot while watching them, but.
They don't stick with you.
Yeah, because we've done a bunch of like random paranormal ones or just monster ones or serial killer or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the paranormal ones, once I'm done watching them, they don't really linger with me.
Oh,
but the
God,
ones
no.
that are like based on like what could actually happen of like a person just being a fucked up individual, like those creep me out like, because I'm like, this
Yellow
feels
Jackets
real.
That I'm watching right now.
What are you watching?
Anyone seen Yellow Jackets?
No.
Oh my gosh. It's just so real, but then also not, and it sticks with me. Like, because it's like it could potentially happen. And
is this with the girls who?
Yeah, the soccer team.
The soccer team. Okay, with Christina Ricci. Yes.
And it's shot all in Vancouver, like where we live.
She was on a show recently. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, and so it's like fun. I like watching shows that are shot here because I'm like, oh, that place and that place.
Yeah, yeah.
But it makes it even more real for me. And I'm like, well, they're like having dinner at a restaurant that I go to all the time. Cool.
Not going there again.
This could literally happen to me.
Yeah.
That's creepy. I don't know. Okay, the last one I have.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, would you rather be a doctor investigating a deadly swamp-borne virus?
Wow, that was a lot.
A lot.
Okay, I had to digest that. So, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And I don't know why swamp-borne is so specific.
That is
But
very
I like
specific.
It better because we're in a pandemic, so I like swamp-borne.
I was just
going
to say, like what we're doing now.
Right. Or would you rather be a cop investigating a string of bizarre murders?
Oh, cop for sure.
Me too.
Yeah, it's a cop.
For sure. Because you don't, there's too many, you don't know. You don't know what that virus is.
And even if we're not living in a pandemic, I don't want to investigate any type of virus or anything.
No, infectious diseases, that kind of thing. It's not for me.
No.
Not enough hazmat.
And like
out there.
Biochemistry is just not my jam. So, yeah.
I mean,
I would be really
We'd all die.
Bad. Yeah, I'd be useless.
I think I'd make it worse somehow. Yeah. I don't really know. Okay, that's all I had.
Oh, okay. See, those are bad.
Those are
fun.
Okay. Yeah. Those are great.
I like that idea. That's kind of fun.
Well, ladies, we appreciate you watching a super long movie with us.
Yeah.
And talking about it.
It was very long.
It was really long. And thanks for coming on our show. We had a lot of fun with you guys.
Yeah, us too. Oh,
thanks for having us.
Yeah, talk about your show a bit more before we move on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Shell, that's you.
Talk about our show? Okay.
Yeah.
Pump our tires.
Tell where they can find
Pump
you.
Pump our tires. Yeah.
Okay.
If they haven't listened to your show yet, shame on them. You know, guilt them if you want, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Sure. Okay. Well, Lisa and I host Whose Crime Is It Anyway, which is a Canadian true crime podcast. True crime from the true north is what we say. And we cover all types of cases. Serial killers, just regular murderers, missing persons cases. We've even done a couple of heists that have happened, including a maple syrup heist. Okay.
How Canadian
is that? More Canadian than that, right?
You can't get more Canadian than that. So there's something for everyone. And we are releasing new episodes every 2 weeks. We've just sort of relaunched for the new year. And And you can find us anywhere. Anywhere you can listen to a podcast, we are there. And mm-hmm. you can also find us on Instagram. We're there at Who's Crime Podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're on Twitter at Who's Crime Pod. That's all I got.
Okay.
That's awesome. Thank you, ladies.
Everybody get on there. Subscribe.
100%. And subscribe, rate and review.
Follow them on all social media. 100%. Five stars.
Obviously.
Five stars only.
Of course. Yeah. They only and take five stars.
If you guys are on Spotify, because we're on Spotify too, you can rate podcasts on Spotify now.
So, yeah, we just learned that.
Yeah. Yes, you so can. Everybody listening to this, go find the girls at Who's Crime and find us and give us all five stars.
Absolutely.
I mean.
Because why not? It's free.
It's free.
It's free. And it's kind.
It's easy to do. It's free. Yeah, it's free to be nice.
It's so nice. It's so nice.
Well, thank you, ladies. We really appreciate it. It was
good
hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, it was super nice to meet you guys finally.
You too. Officially, like see your faces. Yeah. It was nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Hi, everyone. I'm Shell Morgan.
And I'm Lisa Magistrelli. And we're the hosts of Whose Crime Is It Anyway? We are two Canadian girls who cover true crime that happens in the true north. You may think Canada is a pleasant little country full of maple syrup, snowy weather, and people who say sorry all the time. But it's much more sinister than that. There's murder, serial killers, missing persons, mysterious deaths, bank robberies and heists, and we cover them all.
Province to province, coast to coast, and all throughout history, there's crime being committed across Canada. We ask the questions you want to ask. We theorize on what really happened, and we try to find out the truth behind every single case. If you're like us, you'll always be wondering, whose crime is it anyway? Join us wherever you listen to podcasts. Bye.
Toodles.